We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the morning.
Good morning. Good morning. And we are going to do something a little bit different today and take a step back from the headlines and from the, you know, top news of the day, because I think that this is a very, very critical topic and is not being discussed nearly widely enough, especially among conservatives and Christians. And this is the topic, of course, of worldview and how that impacts policy. It impacts politics. We do talk about worldview a lot on the show, and we like to take the sort of 30,000 foot perspective. But I think it is the most critical time right now, with only about 3 months before the November election, to discuss the clash of worldviews that are going on right now. Because this isn't just about Republican versus Democrat. This isn't just about, you know, the alleged border czar versus America First. This ultimately is about what Kamala Harris and her team of handlers and what the radical extremist Democrat left that are Marxist communists really want to transform America to become. And that clash compared to what Donald Trump's vision for America is, and really what it should be, is a contrast between what Kamala Harris envisions and wants to transform America to be with the Founding Fathers' vision for America and what was set out in the Declaration of Independence and what was ultimately codified into our supreme law of the land with the U.S. Constitution. And we're seeing how even Biden wants to transform the Article 3 branch of government and the Supreme Court into a creature of the political state and to be beholden to politics and political activism at will. That's his entire plan for this so-called Supreme Court reform. And the Wall Street Journal, actually, in their editorial board, actually had an article saying that and calling him out for it. And you know, when you've lost the Wall Street Journal editorial board, then maybe you might want to reconsider if you are that anti-American extremist. But, you know, chances are Biden doesn't even know what he's talking about. But Kamala Harris does. So let's welcome in my very special guest for this morning to talk more about the worldview of Marxism, communism, and really this is Luciferian paganism. Luciferian paganism that Kamala Harris continues to talk about with her word salad. So my very special guest today, James Lindsay, who is pro-America, anti-communist, and based, which is your byline of your X account, but also is an author at New Discourses. You can find him at newdiscourses.com. So, James, thanks so much for joining this morning. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Jenna.
Thanks. Well, so let's kind of set the stage here, because you have been one of the only people that is actually going deeper than just the, you know, Republican versus Democrat kind of, I would say, trite sort of typical campaign messaging and, you know, that kind of thing, and actually going to the heart of the root issue with Kamala Harris. How would you describe this overall worldview that the left is attempting to foist upon America and transform America in their sort of utopian Marxist vision?
Yeah, well, you just said it. It's a utopian Marxist vision, which a lot of people don't really understand. We haven't had very good education on communism, so we don't really know what it's about. So we don't know that the utopian Marxist vision creates this idea of a heaven on earth, or a kingdom of God on earth, or if you want, a recreated Eden built by man for man. And that state is called communism. And so Marxism is actually a theological religion that's designed to create a large number of congregants of believers who will then so-called do the work in order to build that utopian place. And in that utopian place, much like it's said about the biblical heaven, the highs will be made low and the lows will be made higher, the mountains will be leveled and the rivers and valleys will be raised. Everything will be equal in their vision, but this is a, you know, enforced artificial equality, like we saw attempted in Soviet Union, in the Eastern Bloc, in North Korea, and in China under Mao, which is a disaster in practice. And so while theirs is a little bit different, it's modified throughout history, it is still this Marxist vision of remaking the world, or as you keep saying, accurately using their word for it, transforming the world into what they believe it should be. That's why you always hear Kamala Harris saying this very imagination-based Marxist line, which is we have the ability, she says, to see what can be unburdened by what has been. In other words, we can transcend our historical conditions, as Mao would call or Marx would call them, and we can see a totally different possibility for a totally different world.
And I think you're so right that by and large, Americans have not had a wide enough or comprehensive enough education of what Marxism actually is. And this becomes important because I think that there has been a huge disconnect on the wider swath of the right for not really calling out Kamala Harris on this and not calling the Democrat leftist agenda on this. And so where do you think that failure of connection between this whole philosophy and actually connecting that to Kamala Harris is, and how do we fix that and start actually calling this out? Because I think this is the best way to challenge her rightly.
Yeah, well, there's a lot to say here. There are kind of three domains. One is education, which doesn't fix anything in the short term. So between now and November, we're not going to fix the education system and teach a generation or two to grow up and understand what communism looks like. But long term, that's an absolute necessity. We have to have that educational program. Like I've said for years, we have redwashed education in this country and have had redwashed education for decades, which means they've washed out all of the communist history, all of the communist understanding that we would need to be able to recognize it. So one of the reasons that there's a disconnect is because we simply haven't learned to connect to it. Another reason is that conservatives have been very against communism, and I mean, tracing back to the entirety of the 20th century, and they're still very against communism, but they unfortunately have a very superficial understanding. I hear constantly that communism means atheism. I hear that communism it's just a bad economic system that doesn't work. And people usually can't articulate why. They don't understand what it is on a deeper level. They don't understand why it motivates people. So there's this kind of conservative meme-plex, a bunch of just low-resolution, bad tropes about what communism actually is that actually get in the way of understanding it. So that's the second force. But the third force, and I think this is the most important one because it's actionable now, is that conservatives are falling for a very sophisticated, believe it or not, psychological operation that's being executed by the Democrats. This operation has put forth two characters, right, in contemporary politics. You could have Obama and make a third, but those are Joe Biden and Kamala Harris that are relevant at the moment. Joe Biden is genuinely incompetent, but he's been able to hide behind, or the Democrats have been able to hide their Marxism behind his incompetence. So I hear all the time the invocation of what's called Hanlon's razor. Hanlon's razor says, never attribute to malice that which can be adequately explained by incompetence. So you have this apparently or literally incompetent person in the person of Joe Biden. So how could he be doing evil on purpose if he's incompetent? So they've hidden his Marxism behind this kindly, doddering, senile old man image that they've put out, which is true except for the kindly part. Now, Kamala Harris is tricking conservatives day in and day out. I've had fever-pitched arguments with conservatives about this one point. Is Kamala Harris actually stupid? The answer is no, she is not. She is a very savvy communist operator who is hiding her communism in what appears to be idiot valley girl speak. And you can't see that she's actually saying pitch perfect communism, whether it's about diversity, whether it's about her agendas to have equity, whether it's about her agenda to make sure that everybody finishes at the same place with equality, whether it's you didn't fall out of a coconut tree, which means your historical conditions bear upon you, as Marx said in his 18th Brumaire of Louis Bonaparte, they weigh upon the living like nightmares. And it's all Marxist rhetoric coming out of her mouth, including the famous line, able to see what can be unburdened by what has been, and the overwhelming push for open borders, which is a Cloward Piven strategy, crime, which is a socialist Cloward Piven strategy, defunding the police and so on. And then finally, at the end of the day, this equity push that she's pushing as hard as she can into everything, this is all naked communism, and we can't see it because we believe she's stupid. So if something short-term actionable is stop thinking that Kamala Harris is an idiot and start thinking that she's acting like an idiot so you can't see who she really is.
That is such an important point, and I think goes back to the second point that you are making, which is that we aren't educated enough on what communism and Marxism truly is, and so we can't identify it close enough. Even if she were thought of as a scholar and very witty and substantive, it's difficult to identify something that you can't clearly see for yourself. I mean, this is why in worldviews, for those listening, one of the best books that I highly recommend is Nancy Piercy's Finding Truth. This is kind of a companion book to her book Total Truth, which lays out the major religions of the world and the contrast between those and Christianity, so that you specifically can identify what is a false and not true, contrasting that to the biblical worldview, because we can't issue spot if we don't know what it is that we're looking for. And so they are able then to cleverly hide this, James Lindsay, behind this word salad kind of nonsense. And I'm seeing a lot of conservatives, like you mentioned that you have, just buy into this and say, Trump will win for sure because Kamala's such an idiot. She cackles. She's nonsensical. Who would ever vote for her? And yet, we've seen her in the first 2 weeks of her campaign. She raised, $100 million. She has a ton of grassroots support. It was the first full weekend of her campaign that they announced there was like 3,600 events across the country that was grassroots organized, and yet it seems like the right is just doing the same kind of thing in 2020 of underestimating her when the messaging, and that was the campaign that I worked for on Trump, was, oh, Biden's, basement Biden. Nobody will ever want him because he's not a strong leader like Trump. And I think you're right that we're totally underestimating her. And you posted this recently as well on social media. You might not recognize it, but this is textbook Maoism. And the post is a photograph of white people for Harris. Trump's path to victory relies on white voters. We won't let him win. What do you mean by that this is textbook Maoism?
It's funny because it's actually the next sentence on their little graphic that it made me realize that it was textbook Maoism, and also the context of having seen these Zoom events, which, I mean, just to be clear, all this grassroots activity, we shouldn't underestimate it. I fully believe that it's astroturf, that it's fake. But that doesn't point to a weakness of Kamala Harris or the Democrat program. It points to the power of their machine. It's very likely that these campaign funds were raised through these weird money laundering. This Act Blue thing is, becoming unignorable. It's very likely that these Zoom meetings are largely actors and things like that, and that the numbers are likely to be padded with bots and foreign accounts and all these different things. That's all likely to be true. The grassroots are likely to be the same thing. But that doesn't matter because the Democratic machine is incredibly powerful. And what they're presenting, what they're showing on what I've also referred to with these, white dudes for Kamala or white women for Kamala or whatever these things were called, I call it struggle session TV. And that's why it's textbook Maoism. The next sentence on that graphic says something about it's our responsibility to use our privilege to advance the interests of people who cannot, or something to that effect. That's the message that you heard, if you paid attention to these white women and white dudes for Kamala, it's our responsibility to use our privilege. So what you have is the what's called the cult of confession dynamic that Mao created to confess your privilege, to confess your alignment with bourgeois or wealthy or privileged values, to confess your bad history and to get other people to do so as well, because what that does is puts them into a cycle of shame. And that shame leads them to feel like they have to use their responsibility to show up and transform the world and to take the side of the oppressed. And so what you're seeing is this exact Maoist dynamic, although I think that primarily that these struggle sessions that we're watching are fake. Most of them are probably, again, actors. But the fact of the matter is that while they're doing it, they're sending out into the world, possibly millions of viewers, that this is the correct attitude to have. This is the correct disposition. This is the pious way to look at this election. And when you, like you said, you know, in 2020, there was an underestimation of Biden. And now in 2024, there's an underestimation of Kamala. The machine that we're dealing with here is a fundamentally religious machine. These are people acting out a political piety with extreme religious commitment and extreme religious fervor and the extreme drive to shame anybody who doesn't go along with their program. And so what we're watching is the textbook Maoist generation of basically a dynamic of guilt and shame for your good fortune in life being turned into a political weapon to drive a mass line that, in this case, to transform history and to protect us from some evil like fascism or racism or whatever, that we absolutely have to all get together and do our part to elect Kamala Harris. And this is a very powerful religious message that the conservatives and Republicans in general need to take much more seriously than they are.
Yeah, so well said, because the left has positioned themselves by contrast to conservatives as the ones who are just all inclusive, and we believe in religious liberty and tolerance and basically are this very precise amoral viewpoint that doesn't have any specific allegiance to a specific religious view. And so they would broadcast themselves as equally tolerant, except to Christianity. And we've seen that very clearly from the Democrats, how they've gone after specifically Christians, how they've gone after pro-life advocates, how a lot of the lawfare is specifically targeting Christians, like cake bakers, like the website designers, like Liberty University, in a recent lawsuit filing over a firing of a transgender person, and basically saying that the ACLU gets to define what the Christian life is for the Christian institution. And so why is it that the wider swath of the big tent, you know, GOP, is allowing the left to position themselves as some kind of universalist message without pushing back and saying, no, this is specifically a religious message?
I think they're just completely unequipped to do so. I don't think they know what they're looking at. The left has very successfully spun a narrative and a vision that Christianity itself is an intolerant religion. It's based on the patriarchal control of women. It's based on the rampant exclusion of sexual deviation and of, in particular, homosexuality. And they've been able to leverage this with a significant body of credible victim narratives from, you know, the 80s and 90s, people growing up under fundamentalist Christian households, to make it look as though Christianity is an intolerant religion. So they get to push themselves as the tolerant because they draw the line at being intolerant only of what they call intolerance, and Christianity falls into the intolerant category. And they've done a very, very good job of making their base believe that. And the conservatives simply have no tools to be able to even reach into that. I don't even think they understand it. They don't understand it further. Why are there all these videos that you think would be disqualifying? You think would Republicans tend to think this would end it? I see them use this as memes all the time. Well, here's Kamala Harris meeting with a drag queen. Well, here's Kamala Harris meeting with, you know, an adult film star. Here's Kamala Harris meeting with some other freak show character. Why in the world? Because what she's signaling to her base is we are so tolerant that we're even tolerant of the intolerable. We accept everybody. We accept everything. We're Jesus sitting down with the prostitutes, whereas Christians have lost the message completely, and all they're doing is excluding everything they don't like, which is you, women, which is you, homosexuals, which is you, black people, which is you, Hispanics, which is you, whoever, Muslims, whatever it happens to be. And they have done an extraordinary job. And I think that the broadly, especially Christian, but even wider Big Tent right, just simply has no tools. They have no conceptual artillery to fire back against it and show that.
And we're going to have to take a break here, but this is why this is so important to cover. We'll be right back with more with James Lindsay right after this. A recent study reports that the rapidly declining global birth rate will lead to a major population crisis if birth rates continue to decline. Their massive support for Planned Parenthood is all part of their plan. While we may feel hopeless in the constant attack on life, there is an amazing way to fight back. When they shout abortion, we shout life. Preborn is leading the way. Every day, their network rescues 200 babies. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life doubles. The ultrasound is the secret weapon that joins a mother's heart to her child. Preborn provides ultrasounds for clinics in the highest abortion areas. Can we join hands nationwide for life? One ultrasound is just $28, but any gift will help. $5,000 will underwrite ultrasounds for an entire network for a day. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Speaking truth with love. This is Jenna Ellis in the morning.
Welcome back, and we are back with my special guest this morning, James Lindsay from New Discourses. He is an author and mathematician and professional troublemaker, it says on your website, and I think that that's absolutely true, especially today. We are trying to cause trouble for the radical left and expose who they really are. And you were mentioning right before the break, James Lindsay, about how the left has very successfully created this idea and this perception that they are all-inclusive, they are willing to tolerate literally anything and everything, even the most overt sexual activity, I mean, the most overt sexual deviancy. And they're painting the Christians on the right as being the intolerant ones. And so they're going after all of these specific groups, especially minorities, and they're pitting, you know, the young white males against the young women who and saying, you know, if you actually want to have a career, then J.D. Vance is calling you a single cat lady, and look at how intolerant he is of your preferred lifestyle and your life choices. And I don't see the right effectively, as you mentioned, pushing back on this at all. It's like we're just sitting back and taking this and thinking somehow if we just call Kamala Harris a border czar enough times that somehow all of these different groups who view themselves as oppressed because of the cultural Marxism that has been foisted on them, that suddenly they'll just decide, oh yeah, Kamala Harris bad, and therefore I'll vote for my perceived oppressor.
Yeah, that's right. It's got to get into people's heads. I know that this is very difficult for people who understand that their virtues and their values are correct, to understand that they're not just being persecuted or whatever. They are literally viewed, and this is very widely across mainstream American culture, they're very widely viewed as intolerant, backwards, and wrong. And this has been an extraordinarily successful operation that the Marxist left has pushed in our country for at least 50 years, and in earnest for at least 30 years. And you cannot simply walk out like you're in the moral superiority position when the vast majority of your population doesn't believe it. You might be right, and it might sit well with you, but it isn't going to sell your message whatsoever. And this dynamic that we were just talking about is so crucially important for people to understand. You look like you are intolerant. They do dramatic signaling that they're tolerant of everything. So they push themselves as the accepting, welcoming party of inclusion and belonging, whereas you are the, you know, the party of limits. You are the party of saying, no, that's not acceptable, or I would reject that. And you look intolerant. You look exclusive, and they're extremely good at this. The right has to organize very quickly to start figuring how to speak into these issues in ways that don't cave into the whole victim mentality, but also speak to the underlying emotions that are being played with here. Because, you know, we've all heard, and we love to repeat Ben Shapiro here on the conservative side of things, how facts don't care about your feelings. Well, the fact is that feelings also don't care about your facts, and it turns out that feelings not caring about facts is about 10 times as powerful as facts not caring about feelings. People, especially when they're not sure what's going on, especially when they're looking for consensus and comfort, will go with the herd. They care. The question isn't, is my opinion true? It's, will people accept whether or not I believe this? And they will go with that 10 times as hard as they will with whatever the facts are if it comes down to a disagreement between those. And the left is very good at manipulating that, and the right is very bad at it. So borders are Kamala. That's a good starting place, but what are you going to do with it? Just say it. Talk about the people pouring across the border. You're tapping into the pity dynamic that they've already set up through a critical immigration theory. And that pity dynamic is these poor people because of climate change and war and living in a third world country. Imagine one of these awful white suburban or, you know, Brooklyn women having to get thrown into Nicaragua. Like, they're horrified by this. So they think, oh my God, I would want to get out of that. So of course we have to let them in. We have to give them a better life. So you're tapping into the pity dynamic. What should be happening is Kamala's the border czar. So many people have come across. Here are all these rapes and murders that have happened. We will protect you. The GOP will protect you. They should be leaning into this whole, we, not law and order in some abstract sense, but we will provide you the security and protection that you need to be able to do your career, to walk home at night safely if you go out to the bar after you work, you young independent woman, you, or to raise your family if that's what's most important to you. But women raising families, on average, aren't voting Democrat. It's single women that are living in cities that are voting Democrat, and those women need to be spoken to in their language. We will make the street safe for you to walk home. Kamala has made it dangerous.
And that seems so simple to do, and yet the right is completely missing that message, and I think it is genuinely because the right knows that it's right in terms of being the rule of law party, having established boundaries, having the rule of law. I mean, conservatism means conserving the past and the foundations of the Judeo-Christian worldview. I mean, all of these things that we like to preach, hopefully, in our churches, and your church should be preaching about it. We like to talk behind the podiums at our very boring seminars. You know, we like to do all these things, but I think you're right that we are not at all tapping into the emotion that drives a lot of these different demographics to vote for something that they perceive as better rather than understanding the dynamic behind it, and then they will embrace the facts of the situation. And so let's talk for a moment about J.D. Vance, because I see this for a number of reasons as not a great choice for Trump. And I mean, and I know J.D. Vance personally. I mean, you know, there are you know, a lot that can be said there, and I don't think he's like the worst pick ever, but I don't think that in a party that already has this image problem, picking another white male who has all of these clips in the past that are being used against him to simply stir up that type of emotion successfully on the left was a very good pick. And there are reports that are saying, you know, that Trump is probably regretting this choice. I don't necessarily see him ever admitting that, even to himself privately. But I think that there are some real concerns there about the messaging with this ticket. Can the Trump campaign successfully tap into this underlying worldview issue when they have a ticket that is a Trump Vance?
Yeah, they can, but it's going to require conservatives to get out of their own way a lot. I agree with you basically about the Vance pick. Actually, somebody told me recently that they thought it was kind of a power pick when Trump was running against Biden, and it's not quite a power pick. In fact, it's a liability running against Harris. Of course, we're not entirely sure he's going to run against Harris either, so who knows what's going to happen with the Democratic side. So it's hard to say, but what's got to happen in this regard, let me just kind of back up 1 second. Into what we were talking about before, is the right has an empathy deficit. This is a gigantic problem. They don't seem to have the capacity to talk into the concerns that the people voting for the other side have, like to actually connect with them, which the Democrats do manipulatively but successfully. And so they don't really have this capacity. They don't have the ability to put themselves in the head of a young single woman, say in her early 30s, who wants to defer having a family in order to build a career and wants to live a fun and, you know, maybe even frivolous life. And so, you know, the way that they go after the situation is like, let's insinuate that Kamala Harris is a prostitute, which the left reads as them bullying her and her being a strong, independent woman who's risen through a unfair system. The only way she could is therefore a victim of a patriarchal system. They say, you know, let's go. We could go on and on about this bad messaging. Well, now they've got this whole thing where they've turned it around on Vance, and Vance has all this, you know, demonizing that same lifestyle. The cat lady thing plays into the exact same thing, that, you know, women who make their own choices in life are somehow the wrong thing, and they should be making the choices that men who happen to be like J.D. Vance want them to make instead. You should be making a family. You should be doing it. And maybe it's true that they would be happier overall if they did, but they don't want to be paternalized by this messaging. And so the only way that they're going to be able to recover this, and I actually, to be honest with you, I doubt that Trump is insecure about this pick now. I think that's a psyops being put out to undermine confidence in the Trump fans ticket. But that said, I think that what's got to happen in order to deal with the old messaging is that J.D. Vance has to lean into his millennial aspects, which is to say he needs to go into some self-effacing, you know, self-consciously ironic humor. He needs to make videos of himself, you know, hanging out with a cat lady and looking really bored, and they have to be obviously a little bit silly, and then like staring over at a couch like it's more interesting. He's got to lean into it with humor. The only way to beat these leftist narratives where they do a labeling game of you is to lean into them with humor. Turns out, just because he's naturally a stand-up comedian, Trump's actually pretty good at this in his weird, brash Trumpian way. Vance needs to learn it, and he needs to learn it fast if he doesn't want to be a liability to this campaign.
Yeah, I'm speaking with James Lindsay, who is an author at newdiscourses.com. You can and you should get all of his books and read them. He's a leading expert on critical race theory and has just so much important content that we need to know for the future of preserving the republic. But you're absolutely right, James, about how the right is suggesting messaging. And there was even a post recently by Eric Erickson, who you know, who's a friend, and he's a conservative commentator, you know, very well known. And he's talking about these attacks that play to the GOP base. And his suggestion is to attack Kamala Harris as being a quote-unquote ladder climber and to label her with that. And this, and she doesn't care about you or the country. She only cares about her career advancement. And I think that this is exactly the type of suggestion that you were just talking about that doesn't work, because, you know, as someone who has, you know, a lot of friends who are single women who are very career minded, they've, you know, put off having a family for that reason. I mean, all of those things, you know, whether Christian or not, the ladder climber actually, I think, reinforces this kind of boss lady sort of narrative that they want to see Kamala Harris break through the perceived glass ceiling that Hillary Clinton was never able to. And they want Kamala Harris to be overall more well-liked because Hillary Clinton didn't achieve that. And even some conservatives, and I know for a lot of people listening, you know, that you're thinking, well, wait a second, what? I mean, Hillary is just so unlikable. But this is the perception beyond just, you know, the type of people that we would interact with in our homeschool groups or in our churches. I mean, these are people that I got to know very well who, say, work on Capitol Hill or in D.C. In the years that I spent in D.C., this is a huge population and demographic group that we're just failing to reach. And so this whole idea of labeling her a ladder climber, I mean, to me, that just totally misses the mark.
No, you're completely right. It does completely miss the mark. It does exactly as you just described. And the thing is the conservatives tend to deliver their criticisms according to what they know conservatives will reject. So let's call her, you know, let's insinuate she's a prostitute. Let's insinuate she's just a DEI hire or a ladder climber or whatever. Those are actually criticisms, or the borders are a thing, because conservatives are very upset about the border. Those things resonate with conservatives, but they don't resonate with leftists. And so they've got to look for a different style of messaging. If you want to resonate with this crowd of leftists and you want to get them, the messaging should always and extraordinarily consistently be, here is a policy that Kamala Harris put into practice and it hurt one of the victim groups that they say they're helping. Here's how Kamala Harris installed something in San Francisco that hurt black people. Here's how Kamala Harris did something at the border that hurt our thriving Latino communities across the Southwest. Here's something that Kamala Harris did that actually made it less safe for women to walk home after work. This is what you have to do, is you have to show how the groups that Kamala is hiding behind as human shields are actually being injured by Kamala's policies, and then say, we care about you in some message or another. We care about you differently than it seems that you're used to, but we care about you, and we want to keep you safe. We want to protect you from those failed policies. I've heard from probably 200 women in the past week all about this that said what has changed their mind, that have gone from left to right. What has changed their mind is seeing specifically how leftist policies hurt the groups they said that they were trying to help. That is the overwhelmingly most powerful and most effective message to reach that crowd of people that is the overwhelming voting base for the Democrats right now.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And we've seen how that type of messaging overall, not just related to specifically Kamala Harris versus Trump or even Biden versus Trump, but even in the pro-life advocacy, where the left is able to, you know, put up the victims, you know, of horrific, you know, rape and incest and some of those things, and to say, you know, look at how we have saved them from a terrible pregnancy and those kinds of things, where then, you know, the right has been labeled successfully by the left as the people who are just, you know, forcing 12-year-old girls to carry pregnancy to term. And, you know, we're the party of the men who are making decisions for women about their bodies. I mean, all of these same principles have applied to almost every leftist policy that conservatives are losing ground on, because you're absolutely right, James, that emotions don't care about facts. And people, especially when they are motivated by fear for their own self-interest, will vote even for will vote for something that is bad policy that they think emotionally is going to help them. And we have to change that direction completely. And so in just the last four or so minutes I have with you, and I so appreciate your time, this is so important for conservatives to understand. Let's, Saki, circle back to the very beginning about how conservatives just don't issue spot and don't understand. Can you give us a couple of practical tools for everyone listening to be able to look into the Democrats' messaging and see for themselves that it's not just word salad, it's not just, you know, Democrat leftist policy, it's actually communist Marxist rhetoric? How can they begin to issue spot this?
I mean, this is a very difficult educational issue. This is what I've obviously dedicated my career to for the last maybe 5 to 7 years. And it's extraordinarily difficult to teach people to be able to identify the cues that signal that we're dealing with communism. Luckily, there's been a huge resurgence of this recently. In the last couple of years, people are starting to catch on. They're starting to realize that words like inclusion and transform are telling them something that's not right, but they need to be able to take the leap and actually say that that's communist. But the only way they're going to be able to do that is by learning what communism is about. There are a lot of resources out there on different levels. My resources tend to be a little difficult. I know that's true, so I don't necessarily recommend you use mine. But there are lots of people now writing about the basic nuts and bolts of communism, and I recommend that you get some of those books. I recommend that you read, if you're not into the theory or that you start reading some of the history. I'm reading Frank Dickhotter's trilogy on Mao's time and power in China right now. I recommend that very highly. It becomes very visible when you see what they did and how they did it. Regarding what you said previous to that, though, about this spreading fear and how it overrides interest, I recently put on social media that demons feed on fear. And so as a general strategy, what we can see is that the left is sowing fear constantly. And a lot of times the right is sowing fear in reply. And so all you're doing, if I'm right with saying that demons feed on fear, is you're just attracting more demons to the circumstance. If you want to get around that, what you need to portray is what conservatives should be selling themselves on, which is confidence, which is we're going to be able to cut through this. This is actually what Trump, for all of his character, is very good at. He's, you know, he doesn't come quite so narrowly as to say, I alone can fix it, or maybe he actually did, but he's all the time. His speeches are, I'm going to fix this, I'm going to fix that, we're going to make it better. Once we get it better, you're going to think it's so great. That level of messaging, as maybe not sounding exactly like Trump while you do it, is extremely effective. We are going to take these problems and fix them. We're going to, and you have to show people, this is the problem and why it's a problem, and here's what we're going to do, and this is why it's going to fix it. That resonates with people, but you have to show them that the policies they're dealing with are injurious. And the bigger leap, which we have to understand on our side, and we're not likely to communicate easily to the other, is that the destruction is intentional. If these people are marked, they are not idiots who are doing insane things. That's the language we always use. They are savvy, manipulative operators who are breaking things on purpose because it gives them a path to power. And we have to understand that and start to get inside of that mindset as well to understand what moves they're going to make and then how to portray the right confidence that short circuits their fear-driven agendas.
Yeah, so well said. And I think that that exact type of messaging is what made Trump so incredibly popular in 2016, is because he addressed the specific problems that everyone was seeing, and it gave solutions and was that type of leader in a very unconventional messaging. And he has to re-harness that. And I think there has been some sort of just overexposure a little bit to some of his tactics and some of the way that he expresses himself. So it's not as easy to grab the attention, and he's not dominating the media right now, which is very unlike Trump. And so the campaign needs to be savvy enough to take a hold of this messaging, as James Lindsay is suggesting, and go after Kamala Harris and her actual worldview. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Speaking truth with love. This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back. And friends, this is why worldview matters. This is why theology matters. And this is why understanding the Christian truthful worldview about God, not just for ourselves and our families, but also for our culture, for our communities, for our very existence in a body politic, matters. Because if we don't understand the truth, we will never recognize falsity. And this is why we have to understand how to live rightly and how to live as a Christian, so that we can call out some of this ridiculous messaging from the left. That, of course, James Lindsay is right, that this is intentional. And of course, they are trying to transform America into this utopian Marxist vision. But we will never be able to effectively talk about it and call it out and describe why it's false, how it's injurious, how it is harmful, unless we understand the truth. And remember, I mean, and for those of you who came into a saving knowledge of Christ later in life, you will probably understand what I mean more than those of us, myself included, who was raised a Christian and who, you know, understood from a very young age the truth. And of course, you know, I have grown, like I think everyone who was raised a Christian, I have grown in my knowledge as an adult and continued my walk with the Lord, not just because, you know, I was raised in a Christian home, but because I recognized it as the truth and chose for myself, right? And so this isn't just about cultural Christianity or, well, you were raised that way. No. Those of us who have decided, as the old hymn says, I've decided to follow Jesus, no turning back. The world behind me, the cross before me, no turning back. That is a decision that all of us have made. And so after that decision, and again, for those of you who made that decision as an adult or later in life, will note that it is the Christian worldview that actually describes correctly reality and the reality to which God has presented us. Mere Christianity from C.S. Lewis is one of my favorite books that describes this because C.S. Lewis was one who came to Christ later in life after being a profound atheist. And that is my hope for James Lindsay, my good friend as well, by the way. Please pray for him because he's so close to getting it and he gets all of these worldviews. But has not just yet made that confession and that next logical step from being, first he was an atheist, now he's a self-professed agnostic. But I pray for him consistently daily. And I just, he is such a dear friend. And I learn so much about the Marxist critical race theory and a critical theory worldviews from him. But for Christians, we have to learn theology and the truth to then contrast what we know about all of those false worldviews. And we have to meet it not just by calling those out as false, but saying what actually is true. And so when we look at the reality to which we are presented, we all have to answer life's most important questions of who are we? Why are we here? Why does anything exist? Who is God? Is there a God? If there is a God, who is he? And how do we know? I mean, all of these things are basic theological questions that we need to have an answer for. And as the Bible commands us to always be prepared to give an answer for the hope that lies within us. And are we, as Christians, simply condemning an outrageously sinful, secular, pagan now society? And are we just simply offended and outraged? Or are we saddened for a culture? Does that prompt us to speak truth into our communities and into the people that we interact with in our lives? I mean, there are several people who've asked me, you know, why do you have James Lindsay on the program? I mean, he's agnostic and how dare you, basically. Well, part of the reason is because I keep up my friendship with James. I mean, we talk all the time offline, and I hope that I speak truth into to his life. I know a lot of people do, but I think that he brings so much value because he understands these false theories and rightly calls them out as false. Now, for the Christian, we need to then meet that with the truth. And it's not just a matter of, you know, saying, well, here are the better policies. Here are the things that will protect you more. I mean, all of that is true, but it's missing the one next and even more critical foundation, which is truth. Because nothing will be a successful policy that is actually in the best interest of humans unless it is consistent with the biblical worldview. Why? Because there is a God. His name is Yahweh Jesus Christ. He is Lord. We know that he has revealed himself through the written word of the Bible and through the reality to which we are presented. We can know him because he has revealed himself in this perfectly aligned universe that allows us to discover him, not only through the reality to which we're presented and the heavens declare the glory of God and the firmament shows his handiwork, but he has also chosen specifically to reveal himself through the inerrant, sufficient word of God. And we know who he is. We know why he created. We know the story. And so we know the truth. And yet we are simply just largely, we are simply only condemning a lost and fallen world instead of being prompted to meet that with truth. And this is why the one singular failing of the Trump campaign that I pray daily that Trump would just be willing to openly speak the name of Jesus Christ at his rallies and bring the truth and to humble himself enough to point to God, not just by God Almighty saved me and pointing back to himself, but pointing to God and pointing to the truth, because the biblical worldview and God himself as the divine lawgiver is the only sufficient source of answers to all of our problems that we're seeing in our community and our culture today. I mean, if you want to have a solution for drag queen story time, if you want to have a solution for religious freedom, if you want to have a solution of where in the margins should policy be drawn to give us the most liberty within moral parameters, the solution is the Bible. The solution is God. And if we fail to understand that and we fail to bring the message of truth into policy because politics is too dirty, and how dare us talk to, you know, the trans drag queen, or, you know, the MAGA drag queen at the Trump rally or whatever. And we're just going to be, you know, good little Republicans out in policy, but we're going to be only having the truth in our churches. We are failing to meet this moment as Christians, and we're failing the command of Christ to go into the world and teach the gospel truth. Because the best way to reach those, you know, single cat ladies and the people who just want careers over family, teach them the truth, give them a yearning for the truth, bring them into a saving knowledge of Christ. This is the only way that we're ever going to have answers to the problem of sin. And no, we're not going to just have, you know, dominion everybody, and this will be just a Christian nation by compulsion. It has to be the desire of every human heart to be right with the Lord. So get the book, Finding Truth, Nancy Piercy. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna@AFR.net.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.